We are Two Guys Gaming. Hello and welcome. As always, even though we are under the Two Generations Gaming banner, this is One Guy Reading. Whether you meant to or not, you've found Noob's Book Club. I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, and in this series I am reading and reacting to Ready Player One, the novel by Ernest Cline. I missed another deadline, of course. As you know, I should have recorded on Monday, but I did not. So I'm doing it on Thursday. I only have 3 episodes left based on the schedule that I put together, and I have like a week and a half to get it all done. So hopefully I will be able to get it done before we go away to Germany. At the very least, I'd like to get the book done. And then maybe when we come back, we can celebrate with the finale and the movie versus episode that I planned on doing. Although honestly, those were both too fill some time, so who knows if I'll actually do those episodes. Maybe I'll just roll the finale into the final episode and do the movie versus at some other time, because I have to sit down and watch the movie again. I was only half paying attention when I watched it the first time. I'll figure that out after I record and post this episode and update you with the next episode, which will most likely come this weekend, I'm hoping, since I have a 4-day weekend to get it done. In this episode, I'm going to read and react to the beginning of Level 3, Chapters 28, 29, and 30. Level 3, Going Outside is Highly Overrated, Anorak's Almanac, Chapter 17, Verse 32. Chapter 28. Wade watches the movie Explorers, a story about three kids who build a spaceship in the backyard. I vaguely remember the movie from when I was a kid. He watches it because it helps him stay centered as the IOI corporate goons come to arrest him. He watches them through a video feed of the apartment security in the corner of his display. 4 jackbooted, riot-helmeted IOI indentured server retrieval transport cops, that's a mouthful, march followed by a guy in a suit. They blow by the front desk, get on the elevator, and make their way to Wade's floor. He executes enhanced security. They come down the hall with plasma welders and stun guns. The suit carries a clipboard. While you and I might be surprised by this development, Wade is not. His security scanner fills in some of the details for us. They are officers with a valid indenturement arrest warrant for one Bryce Lynch. The normal security yields to them, but his war door still inhibits their progress. The suit, a guy named Michael Wilson, reads him the reason for their visit. The reason comes as a surprise, at least to me. He missed the last 3 payments on his IOI issued Visa card, and he owes over $2,000. With no job, he is quote-unquote eligible for mandatory indenturement. He will work until he pays off the debt, minus his assets, and plus any damages that they have to make to the apartment extracting him. Wade replies with a quip, and Wilson warns him of the property damage stipulation and that they have authorization to enter by force if necessary. He steps away from the door and nods to them to get started. They move down the wall. Easier to cut through the wall than the war door. Wade did reinforce the walls with a cage, but that only gets him a few more minutes. He mentions that they call this a C-section. Stupid and uninspired, of course. He drops some anti-anxiety pills. No help. In the Oasis, he closes windows, sets the security to max, and checks the scoreboard. Back to status quo. All of them tried to contact him, but he ignored them. No need to include them in this plan. Plausible deniability and all that. He closes the scoreboard, looks around his stronghold, and logs out. He then executes a failsafe that wipes his hard drive. Max and he bid each other a fond farewell for now. The cops finish cutting through and enter the apartment. They verify no weapons and then threaten him with a taser if he resists. They put a gag in his mouth to prevent any further voice commands. Since he already executed the failsafe, that move is redundant only. The cops drag him out of his chair and throw him on the floor. He starts to shake involuntarily in fear and apprehension of being taken outside. They place him under arrest and cue the repo team. Taking his suit for repo, they give him a jumpsuit to cover his naked body. He gets to flip off Wilson, one of his favorite things to do. They lead him down a corridor to the elevator and outside. He hums along to the music in the elevator until the thug threatens him. They put a coat on him to keep him from getting sick. It is snowing and a gray winter day. 2 other people are already in the van. A malnourished person and a quote-unquote morbidly obese individual with a mask to catch quote-unquote his vomit. Wade is unable to discern the gender of the person, but attributes him as a him. They ask Wade if he wants a mask, but he refuses. While they travel, all of his items will be inventory tagged and listed for auction. They'll fix up the apartment and flip it by the end of the day. A visor shows him a tranquil scene on a beach while they travel so he doesn't get too rowdy. He lifts it to be able to see the outside world for the first time in months. Neither of the guards seem to notice him and allow him this bit of humanity. Chapter 29. He describes it as a thick film of neglect covering everything. The snow even looks like ash. So many more homeless people in tents in cardboard shelters. Then they pull into the headquarters at 101 Iowa Plaza in the heart of the downtown. The buildings look as they do in the Oasis, but if able, even more impressive, he said. They roll into an underground garage and then to a loading dock that reads IOI, Indentured Employee Induction Center. Another mouthful. Taken off the transport, they file through a squad of armed guards. The guards remove restraints, scan their retina. Parenthetically, his comes back clean, dirty, well as his fake ID. Then lead them into another room where they're queued through a different security checkpoints. Periodically, they pull people who have built-in tech in order to have them removed. The indents are tested to find their strengths for their servitude. He fixes his results to get a job with support instead of the Ology department. Too risky that someone will recognize him there. Plus, his plan will work better if he's working in tech support. Upon finishing the exam, they gave him the terms of his contract. $28,500 per year, minus housing, meals, taxes, medical, dental, optical, and recreation. When he pays off his debt, he may get offered a job with IOI, pending his job performance. As you'd expect, none of it matters. The contract was structured to prevent indents from making any headway in paying off their debts. Nevertheless, he scrolls the 600-page contract without reading and signs with a retina scan to verify. He briefly wonders if the contract can be legally binded if he used a false identity, then decides it doesn't matter. So Wade wants to bring them down from the inside. Bold move. Let's see if it pays off for him. After signing the contract, he gets a wash and disinfect. Then they perform the medical tests and physical. I start to worry that DNA might nab him. Thankfully, he reminds me of the Privacy Act. The final stop here is vaccines. During the process, a training video plays, starring minor celebrities. He eventually memorizes the video and mouths along with them. He responds sardonically to the opening line, "What can I expect with, you're a corporate slave, Charlie Brown," parenthetically, my paraphrase in both cases. The last station fits him with a security anklet. It acts as both a GPS and grants him access around the building as necessary. If he runs, he gets zapped or tranked. They also attach a device to his left ear, an OCT, observation and communication tag, colloquially called quote-unquote ear gear. It allowed them to see what he saw and communicate with him. Once the gear boots, he hears the droning voice of the IOI in his ear. He eats some lunch, some gross shit as he describes it. Sounds similar to the description that I put in my book of the gross lunch that people eat. Yeah, I wrote a book. I wrote two, in fact, and self-published them. You can look for them, if you so desire. I think you can only find one. I took one of them off the market. Then he uses the bathroom. The voice takes him to an elevator to indent hub 05/tech reps. He walks down a hallway to his HAB unit 42G. His shift starts in 7 hours. The block reminds him of a mausoleum. Hallways networked together, lined with coffin-shaped sleeping modules, stacked 10 high, lettered from A at the bottom to I at the top. His unit, predictably, at the top of row 42, is accessible by ladder, platform, and then an iris-like door. You've seen the doors before in other science fiction stuff. They open like an iris and close like an iris, you know, that twisty-turny stuff. The pod measures a meter high, a meter wide, and 2 meters long. A foam rubber mattress and a pillow line the floor. He figures that they're new because he can still smell the burning rubber. There's a camera in the room and a flat screen on the wall. They called it an entertainment console, but only offered him one option, a news network full of propaganda. Other options may become available if he does a good job. He watches the quote-unquote sitcom, Tommy Q, and thinks about Artemis until he falls asleep. Chapter 30. The tech support division takes up 3 floors on the Eastern I building. The floors all contain number cubicles. Not having earned the privilege, he has no decoration in his. He logs onto the Oasis visor in his cubicle that activates once he sits. They obviously limit his access to work emails, support docs, and to be able to check his stats. He starts his 12-hour shift. His first customer? Some douchebag named Hotcock 007 with a sword too high for his avatar. He takes the opportunity of being auto-censored and muted to throw a couple of insults at the dumbass. He then moves on to the next avatar, a well-endowed red alien named Vartax, and receives his score from the previous, 6 out of 10. He can't escape like he used to when he worked. The only distraction was the IOI stock ticker constantly running on the screen. He gets 3 5-minute breaks and a half-hour lunch. He falls asleep during work often. They prescribe him uppers. He uses them to stay awake at night instead of during his shift. Quote unquote, lights. The word becomes synonymous with freedom to Wade. When the lights go out, due to some sabotage, so do the cameras watching him. If anyone checked his records, they say that he watched this stupid show and fell asleep at roughly the same time every night until his shift the next morning. In reality, he used some hacked IOI intranet passwords. He figures that the person who posted them is a disgruntled ex-employee who programmed intentional backdoors that he could then use to help someone hack into the system. Wade figures the person wants to assuage their guilt for having worked for such a demonic company, I think is how he puts it. The catch to the codes is that they only work from the inside, and then it all comes together. Wade gets himself arrested to go to the heart of the beast and bring it all down from there. He waits for the second day to test the passwords. It gives him access as a technician, but still limited. He uses the access to create an admin account, searching the urology files first. But before that, he finds a 10 zettabyte flash drive to download the files. He has it ordered and sent to a cubicle near him where nobody works. So nobody gets suspicious. Although you would think that they would get suspicious anyhow, but I guess we can forgive these things to push the plot forward, right? They have so much information. His ego compares their files to his own research, and the hubris brings him some humility. They have stuff he'd never even consider. He started with their stuff on the orb. Then he moves to their attempts at the castle. They failed each time. While all of that loads onto his hard drive, he moves on to the High Fives files within IOI. What he finds truly chills the blood. They refer to the five as quote-unquote threats. They have Artemis on constant surveillance, an X over Dido's picture because they killed him. They have some info on Shoto, and almost nothing on H. Wade downloads all of the information on them. Then he sees the plan. Kidnap Artemis and Shoto, use them to open the gate, and then quote-unquote dispose of them after they win the contest in the egg. He sets up a timed transfer to wipe out his fake debt on his fake identity. But he didn't have time to wait. Artemis and Shoto are on the clock. So he grabs all of the information that he can and fast-tracks the next phase of the plan. And now for my reaction. I told you last episode to buckle up. More rage against the post-apocalyptic capitalist hellhole that we all live in was coming in this episode. I don't make fake promises, so here goes. If you want none of my hippie commie ramblings, then stop the episode now and join us next time. But like I said, buckle up. From this point forward, you get what you get. First, let me say that my parents raised me quote-unquote right. I do get the hippie part from them, but I come by the commie part more honestly, and sometimes in spite of them. They valued hard work, parenthetically, my mother more than my father, and they instilled that value in me. I worked 3 jobs, and sometimes only came home to sleep. Reading my son's scholarship essays, it broke my heart that he mentioned that as his quote-unquote hardship to overcome, because they always ask you silly questions like that. But at the time, I took pride in working so hard to quote-unquote provide for my family. Never mind what I provided them, or even if I provided them anything other than a steady paycheck. If you're still here, I hear you shouting at the phone, quote-unquote, what more can you provide them? Oh, I don't know, love, support, a sympathetic ear, a shoulder to cry on, someone to kiss their boo-boos, hug them before bed, just to name a few. I could have provided them my presence. Oops, some of that happy commie slipped out. All in due time. Well, during this time, I drove a 45-minute commute both ways. It gave me a lot of time to think. It also gave me the chance to delve deeper into the world of podcasts. I started with a rotation of politics, sports, women's rights, and pop culture, UK comedy shows, and then more politics. I also peppered in Marc Maron, economics, and soccer during the World Cup seasons. Well, one thing I consider most often during my things is the nature of money. I also thought about logic, argument, fallacies, and even the error of extending that logic to the extreme. Over the years, this merged with my newly discovered, parenthetically by me, concepts of social justice. Then I found an audience willing to listen and argue with me. I wondered aloud once, during a discussion on economics and the fracturing of society, how we can't agree on anything in the society, but we still agree that a dollar is worth a dollar. Moreover, how can we agree that this dollar, still worth a dollar, has less value than a dollar last year, 10 years ago, and especially 50 years ago? How is that the convenient fiction that we all accept? Make it make sense to me. While you're at it, help me to understand how some people can look the other way when a cop murders a man, but looks aghast and tells you to watch your mouth when you say the word fuck. Speaking of those cops that murder unarmed black men, I started to educate myself about the history of the police in this country. Someone made the argument that MLK spoke out famously against rampant capitalism, and that may have led to his murder. I admit that the case is compelling. The U.S. famously kills or disappears opposition leaders abroad. Why not here at home? All of this study led me to other areas, and things started to fall into place. Hey, these Oreos seem smaller. Nope, that's your imagination. They just look smaller because your hands are bigger. Then, within the last couple of years, I started to hear about this stupid concept called shrinkflation. So now they're saying the quiet part out loud. So now they just don't give a shit. They're just telling you straight out, yeah, they're smaller, buy the Oreos or don't, fuck you. What do you mean that you're charging me $30 for not having enough money? The only reason that they have a minimum wage is because if you could, your boss would pay you even less. Speaking of minimum wage, if it kept up with productivity and CEO pay, it'd be $25 an hour, but we won't even give you $15. Also, what the hell is up with supply and demand? Because there's hundreds of iPads on that shelf not being sold, and I don't see the price coming down as a result. All of this is nonsense, and yet we believe it as if it was written into the fabric of the universe. Look, I don't close myself off to the possibility that I'm wrong. I change my mind when presented with a more compelling argument. I just need someone to make it make sense for me. Because what I see now, parenthetically, and this may be projection, and what I see that Klein sees, is that you and me and the other regular folks aren't the ones responsible for poisoning the planet and making life difficult for future generations. Sure, we play our part, and everyone can quote-unquote do better, but our contribution pales in comparison to the corporations and billionaires. Speaking of billionaires, how are we all okay with seven people owning as much of the wealth as $4 billion at the bottom? Even if we suppose for a moment that they are special people destined for greatness and not supported by a system built on cooperation that they mercilessly exploit for their own benefit, surely looking at those numbers gives anyone pause. 7 equal to $4 billion? Let me run some other numbers by you. A billion equals 1,000 million. That is to say that if you had $1 billion, you could give 1 million to 999 other people, and you'd still be left with your own million. At $100 a day, it would take over 27,000 years to reach $1 billion. Again, I ask, make it all make sense to me. The most recent and compelling argument I heard got mentioned in the previous episode. You, and those you know, are closer to homelessness than to being a millionaire or especially a billionaire. Like, by a lot. All those GoFundMe pages for people who need help with their medical bills? How many do you see versus how many do Zuck or Musk see? I'm just saying, comrades, maybe the mom using food stamps to buy groceries for her kids is not your enemy. You can argue that nobody is, and fine, we can have that discussion, but it is certainly not her. As usual, I'm just trying to say that we're all in this together. You, me, your neighbor, our colleagues. You know, us, not the billionaires, unless they get cool about a bunch of stuff real quick, namely a more progressive tax system, fairer wages, and an end to the hoarding of resources disguised as quote-unquote scarcity. If they're still in the mood to negotiate, we can discuss other terms. But if their allies taught us anything, we don't negotiate with terrorists. And these people are economic and environmental terrorists. Remember when Sorrento said that they weren't all that bad and then they went on to try to kill Wade and then killed Dido? Yeah, that has definite quote-unquote, this company is family vibes. You know what? Fuck all those guys entirely. Okay, there you have it. It's only part of it, but that's a big part of where I'm coming from right now. I mean, thanks for listening if you made it this far. Thanks for taking the rant into consideration. If you want to talk about things, again, I'm willing to talk, I'm willing to listen, I'm willing to have the conversation. But that's it for now. Hopefully next episode is a little more in line with the calm that we've had in the past. As always, if you haven't already, you can find us at www.twoguysgaming.net. We have articles, a link to our socials, including our YouTube, where I have the daily RPG calendar that I'm doing. I got behind on that again, but again, I'm going to get caught up, and then I'll get caught up just in time to go away to Germany, and I have no idea what I'm doing while we're in Germany, so then I'll have to get caught up when we get back from Germany, but We'll deal with that when we get there. I will be back sometime this weekend with the next episode, and then hopefully get the other two episodes out before we go, and maybe even the finale and the movie verses. We'll see how things go. Once school lets out, I'll have much more time to sit down and do these little projects. I will talk to you again in a few days. Bye, guys.
We are two guys.